The EFINA Podcast, an advocacy tool that seeks to illuminate the financial and economic inclusion challenges, solutions, and advancements in Nigeria. It is the first podcast in Nigeria focusing on this discourse. Join us on this journey.
Good day. Welcome to the EFINA Podcast. My name is Emmanuel Umkoro, your usual host. You remember that the EFINA Podcast is one of our advocacy tools that brings to bear all the salient issues that we deal with within the financial service ecosystem. Here, we discuss the issues as they come, very topical, and try to offer perspectives that help the ecosystem to advance, bearing in mind that the economy that benefits everyone must, first of all, include everyone. Once again, welcome. On today's podcast episode, we're going to be discussing this topic that you will have been hearing and have been asking a question, what does this really mean? We're going to be discussing open banking. What is really open banking? Well, a lot of people have been asking questions. What I can tell you before I bring my guests on is that in those days, you used to get this request that give me permission so that I can read your phone contact, you know, read your SMS and everything that was within your phone before I can provide you service as a financial service provider. But with open banking, we are shifting from data grabbing by first consent to data sharing with you, the customer, as the king. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the EFINA Podcast. Let me introduce my guest, a renowned industry expert, someone who has been in this space as long as I can remember. When I came in, I met him. Even without knowing who he was, I've been hearing him. He is one of the proponents, in fact, the foremost proponent of open banking in Nigeria. He's worked in the banking space for years. He's moved into fintech. You know, he's building products that focus on credit, democratizing credit, and making lending very, very affordable and easy for lenders by providing the technology that lenders can plug into. He's no other person than Adedeji Olowe.
Yeah, thanks so much.
My boss, you're welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good.
So I've always heard that you cannot discuss open banking without speaking to Deji. And that got us talking. What Nigerians really want to hear is, first and foremost, at what point did you come to realization that this open banking thing must fly in Nigeria?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So the issue of open banking is actually like rooted in a problem we're trying to solve. So then I was an executive director with Remita, working with John Obaro. And at one time we had this project we wanted to do, right? Where you could see all your bank account in one app. So Remita has always served the government, done amazing technology for collection, being used for payroll. And we just felt, we will view all your bank account in one place. Mm. But we found that it was extremely difficult. Like, it wasn't that easy. As it just didn't make sense because we knew as technology people, getting balances and transactions was supposed to be the same. But somehow, all the banks were speaking different languages. So I was the one driving that it was difficult. And then around the same time, the UK was now doing the open banking, 2016, 2017. Now, this was now 2017, and I was struggling with it. We just told ourselves, okay, what if we use the UK method now? At this time, the UK was doing open banking to make their own big banks more straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. So UK's idea of open banking was for regulatory compliance and to create a level playing field. We needed it for innovation because we kept seeing so many smart guys, big companies, even people as big as Visa and MasterCard, struggling to launch products into the market because the APIs are all messed up, the customers are all don't know what to do. There was so much, it was like a tower, like a tower of Babel. So that is what led us to start. And I can tell you officially it started on June 1st, 2017. Because that was the day I ended up sending the mail to all my friends and said, guys, let's do open market.
Okay, so, you know, we use this as an icebreaker so that people can understand the rationale, right? The problem that, you know, led to this like minds, you know, smart minds putting this idea together to see this is something that we need to do. I know in the Nigerian financial service ecosystem, there has been manifestation of open banking, given what you've just described.
Okay.
One way or the other, people have been sharing data. However, it comes with complexity. Just for our viewers to really understand, what exactly is open banking to a 13-year-old, you know, child? What is open banking?
Okay, thank you so much. So before I even describe what that means, Nigeria's never seen open banking. So we get to hear people say, oh, I'm doing open banking, I'm open banking startup. No.
Okay.
It's not correct. Nobody has ever done open banking in Nigeria. We are all working on making it happen. Now, what is open banking? Open banking is the ability of any customer of a bank to grant access to their bank account to a third party using a standardized asset. Now, granting access does not mean it's open banking if the method of doing it is not standardized. In fact, in open banking, is that common standard that is actually called open, not even granting of access. Because you could grant access through some proprietary method, right? That doesn't make it open banking. You could have access through some other ways, it's not open. So open banking, the open in open banking is like open source. You know, you could write software. The fact that I can see that software does not make it open source.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it open source is available for everybody.
Okay.
So open banking is about open standard, which means every single customer, every single bank is speaking the same API language. That is what makes it open banking.
Let me interject thereby. So you talk about being available for everyone. And there is this question that I've been hearing from the industry. Does it mean that by default, every provider, right, is co-opted into open banking?
Not at all. So open banking in Nigeria is first and foremost going to be available only to entities that are regulated by the central bank. Not only are you regulated, and then you must be in good standing. Good standing means your license is valid. So central bank is going to create this amazing technology called the registry, where you can know who has the right to do open banking or not. That's number one. But even despite the fact that you are regulated by the central bank, unless the customer gives you an explicit consent, if that explicit, just make it in capital, in bold, and in red. Like, when it means explicit is you will specify the kind of access they will have to your account, how long they will have that access, and you can revoke that access as well.
Mm.
That is a real primary driver of open banking. Explicit consent. Nothing will be implied. So if they can debit you, you will say, allow them to debit me.
Mm.
If they can see your transaction, you say, allow them to see my transactions. And the day you get tired of them doing whatever they are doing to your account, you can revoke the access as well.
So we'll go into the specifics in terms of the nomenclature, the process, operational process, how open banking will work. So you started going into that already. But when you then start speaking to the inclusion, let's then assume that there are FSB A to Z, right, who are providers. And we'll get into the details of who is a API provider and who is API consumer as we go on. If my FSP is not then listed on the registry, like you described, what does that mean for me, who is a customer of that, you know, bank or financial service provider?
Frankly, that's going to be quite challenging.
Okay.
Because we also see this problem every time. You are a new FSP and you are not available for to transfer money.
True.
So that's why these days when you are a new MFP, you are a new financial service provider, the first thing you do is go to NIPS and make sure that you're available on the drop-down of banks.
True.
So that people can transfer money to you. So an FSB not available on open banking could have detrimental effect. So if we're going to do financial inclusion, it means that we have to think about this thing clearly. And I'm happy that at the national committee level where open banking is being done, EFINA is part of this.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to elevate this access to financial inclusion so that there is no... people, nobody's left behind.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to do open banking that address the need of more sophisticated Nigerians. Why we leave the Nigerians that are vulnerable or poor behind, right? And they probably need that thing more than anybody else.
Okay. You talked about the flow, right? So just to put it in more perspective, looking at, and I'm still going to stick with that question, there is, you use the NIPS analogy, why the banks, you know, the providers need to then get on NIPS, you know, to be integrated so that they are visible to other banks, can find interoperability and all of that. Now, in a situation where a couple of FSPs, X percent, do not meet the standards, the guidelines, what would make them to be listed on the registry, right? It means that they cannot, you know, be part.
Okay.
Yes. Just to lay that, because it's not by default that because you are a provider, you are automatically in the registry.
Yes,
you
I understand.
Meet certain standards.
Absolutely. I know that because what we're working on at the National Committee imagines that, yes, you are licensed. Every FSP is licensed. If you're not licensed as an FSP, that is non-inclusion. That is pure irresponsibility. So let's say you are licensed and your license is current.
Mm.
You will need technology. You need money to certify.
Okay.
So I think this is where we have to elevate that technology. So for us at Open Banking, where I'm one of the trustees, we've already built a software ahead for free for everybody to use, for those who don't have technology. But I know that despite that, they will still need additional finances to be able to run their certification, to be able to find technical people that will implement for them. And I know fully well that their conversation around NIPS being able to power some people and help them. Maybe this is where we have to speak to more senior people in the industry who are going to step ahead and say, sometimes when you're looking at the ecosystem, you don't look at it from how much you make yourself. You look at this ecosystem has to be inclusive. You guys at FNI, you understand the power of inclusivity.
Yeah.
It's not about how much do I make, unit economy. Sometimes the sum is bigger than the parts.
True.
And that is what I hear you say here. So open banking has to be inclusive to be worth the effort for everybody.
Absolutely. Because for me, it then means that someone who will have benefited by some reason is not because of the design, why the bank that this is a customer of this bank, you know. And that takes me to even, which we'll get into later, because I do hear that for you to be in the open banking to play, you'll be given some form of, you know, access as an FSP, a key, you know, that makes you then to be able to, you know, operate within that technology.
Yeah.
And if you violate some certain protocols, you know, there's revocation and all of those things. And I'm just thinking, so in that process, right, what happens to customers whose data could have been pulled, right, to enable them to access some services that could really change their lives, you know, over a lifetime. So I'll give a scenario. I am a customer of, you know, FSPA. I don't like using banks. That people don't think it's just about banks, right? FSPA. You are a customer of, you are a provider FSPB, right? And there is a service you're providing that I really would like to get, but you need to read certain data that I have with my bank. However, my bank, for some reason, has the license or the key has been revoked and cannot play on for a period of time. Let's say those are sanctions that are put in place. In that process, in as much as a regulator, those sanctions are put in place, I am by default of those sanctions being enforced excluded, because you cannot then pull data from my bank because my bank or my FSP is not within the architecture for that period of time. How is the system designed to address those concerns in such a way that my FSP is not out of the system for a longer time that eventually then impacts my ability to assess this solution that you have created that will have changed my life, you know, redefine my life maybe as an SME or as an individual customer?
Yeah, thanks for that brilliant question. So I'm going to answer that question. I also ask you a question as well.
Okay.
So here's the thing, right? You describe a perfect scenario. And this thing happens to us. Look at Nigeria. We're trying to get out of FATF now.
True.
I have never done fraud before. You don't do fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have done fraud. All of us are in gray. We're all in gray list.
Yeah.
So sometimes, right, trouble comes.
Indifferent.
We have to keep the sanity of the system.
Okay.
If the sanctity of the ecosystem is not protected, right, it's always going to be a trouble. Because even if we say, oh, these vulnerable people, we need to think about them, this bad actor can bring everything down. The entire digital ecosystem
works on trust.
Mm.
If we don't take out bad actors, the entire thing will fall down for everybody anyway. So if a customer, what then, if you notice very well that CBN doesn't do this often, because everybody that's licensed at CBN also knows the implication or the impact of misbehavior. So nobody got touches live wire because CBN will shock you straight. They don't play, right? Now, but my question back to you will be, the bigger banks, right? Because your FSB have a range from the big international banks all the way to the small FSB with 1,000 customers.
Yeah.
The big bank can take care of themselves. They've got money for technology and the rest of them. Is there anything you guys are doing to going to help these people to meet open banking regulatory requirement? Because ultimately, at open banking, we are giving them a free software, but it doesn't come with the technology people to do it.
Sure.
If the additional features, it doesn't, how would that work?
Mm.
Because even if you give them the software, but they don't have the expertise and the people to help them to do this thing, they may not be able to go far, and these vulnerable people might be excluded.
Absolutely. So I think you've given me a very, very good problem to think about and, you know, start engaging. So in as much as the technology might be there, there are customers who are customers of these seemingly small FSPs that, you know, we then need to capacitate so that they can meet regulatory requirements. Okay, let me pivot a little bit. Let's assume I am a customer.
Okay.
And of course, I'm a customer. Tell me, what is the customer journey like in open banking?
Okay, awesome. So first and foremost, open banking can be used for different things, right? When we look at the use cases, first, it can be used for payments.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used for loans. It can be used for subscriptions. It can be used for just data. So let's take payment, for example. So payment can be both in person or online. Let's take online payment.
Okay.
You want to buy something from, say, Jumia, for example. And you get them, when you want to check out on Jumia, what are the options? You could pay with card.
Mm-hmm.
You could do with virtual account. You could do pay on transfer. Delivery. Or you could do, virtual account give you transfer.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But now you're going to go to pay with open banking. Now, pay with open banking means you put in your account number and then you tokenize it. Now, the challenge, before now, we have cards. If there are 100 customers that have cards, 100 bank customers today, 70 have cards. Out of those 70, maybe about 30 of them, their cards are not working.
True.
But for open banking, there is 100% coverage, right? You can put in your account number, tokenize it, and make payments. If you're outside the bank, outside online...
Now, before you go there, let's stick with this. So I have imputed my account.
Oh, details. Right. Okay. Yeah. So how the journey will be? So let's say you get and say pay with bank account. When you click pay with bank account, it will now bring something they call the consent system.
Yeah.
The consent will be like, we should use Gmail and you want to connect, say, grant access to something. It's going to be similar as well. It will be saying something like, let's say your bank is Bazobia Bank. It will be saying something like, I, Emmanuel... Vazobia Bank, Jumia wants to have access to your account to debit you for $55,000 for the purchase of XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Do you grant access? You say yes, you move forward. You probably put OTP that will be sent to you. If it's for the first time, you probably do facial recognition to make sure it is you, not my cousin.
Yeah.
And then when you accept, you move forward. Then Jumia now asks consent, they will debit your account. If it's a one time, that consent is one time. They cannot debit you again. If it's a subscription, you will see that, this gym is able to debit you every month for $25,000 for gym subscription. Every month, they come back and debit you, right? Mm-hmm. If it's your data that a lender wants, you will see that, they are going to have access to your bank balances and transaction. You give access to them. That is the way consent will work. You have to give explicit control. Now, when you give a consent once, down the line, your gym is debiting you. Meanwhile, you're not going to the gym. You got upset. You go back into your app. You see that gym subscription. You press cancel. You cancel it, and you're fine.
Hmm. So now let's move towards the credits use case, for instance.
Okay.
So you are a provider, and you advertise this fine, amazing credit product that I think this will just solve my problem, my business problem, right? So I come to your platform,
okay,
and I request for that credit.
Yeah.
Tell us what happens after that.
Okay, so when you request, as you are requesting credit, the lender will tell you, thank you, Emmanuel, for the loans you want to take from us. We will need access to your bank account to be able to say that you actually earn the money you say you earn.
Okay.
want to see how you spend your money to see whether you are within certain risk profile.
Mm.
And then when you grant the access, Wazobia Bank will jump up again and say, oh, Adedejola where Credit Limited wants to have access to your KYC and your transaction. Yeah. Do you want to grant them access? Is it going to be one time or they can be strolling by every time they feel like coming? Then you accept. You also put the OTP. You also take your picture, your
fascia.
And obviously, your fascia is being compared to your BVN to make sure that it is you.
The same.
And then you grant access. And then the credit company has the token and they use the token to put your data. If it's a one-time token, that's the only time they can use it. If it's a recurring token, then they can also continue to use it recurringly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but for loans, so you can almost remove the access for transactions view, but for the access for debits,
mm-hmm.
maybe direct debit on your whatever, yeah. that will require you requesting to have the token taken.
Okay.
Remember, somebody gave you a loan and yeah. is expecting to get paid. So mm-hmm. what's going to happen is that there's going to be a structure in place where they will have X number of days to be able to say, okay, this person wants to remove the token, I agree or not. And if you are still owing them, they will disagree. This will end up protecting lenders
yeah.
because trust the world. People will start removing token consent from loans they've taken.
So, you see, there is this for those who are not within the open banking environment.
Okay.
They will say, but when I want to borrow, of course, they ask me to send my statement, right? And sometimes I don't necessarily have to send. I can just, on my app, tell my bank to mail my statement directly to the lender, right? If it's an embassy, you can forward your statement, the bank can send direct. So one way or the other, I have still consented that my bank, please forward this statement, this detail to. How is that different from what you're describing?
Okay, so here's the thing. In that, first and foremost, not every bank is able to send statement in a consistent way.
Okay.
Right? Even for the same bank, corporate bank, banking platform, and retail will have statement in different formats. One, the central tenet of open banking is standardization.
Okay.
What we find in FSBA, in line with your method, is what we find in FSB ZZZ.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is speaking the same language. Today, the one thing that makes cards to be useful all over the world is the colors may be different, the design may be different, but it's exactly the same shape, same thickness. So you take your card from Nigeria, take it to Kathmandu, it work. Take it to Alaska, it work. Bring card from Russia to Otibia Market, it works, right? Because there's a standard.
Mm.
That standard is what you do. That's number one. Number two, you have assurance that what you're getting is not oluwole. Because if you're taking PDF from different people, we can create interesting version of those PDF that make us appear in ways that we're not.
Mm. So, I wanted to... So my thinking really, and please validate whether this is true or not, the single source of consent, will that be the BVN or your NIN, for instance? What are you tying that consent to?
So consent is consent for the customer, right? Okay. In the banking world, BVN identified the customer. But NIN is a national identity. Every single person that has a BVN has an NIN. Not everybody that has an NIN has a BVN. The BVN is a primary ID within the banking ecosystem. But when you check the BVN itself, you see a place there that says, this is the NIN of this person.
Yeah.
Now, individuals can be identified by BVN or NIN, but corporates, they actually do the bigger transaction. A corporate is not a human being. It's a collection of human beings. Now, a corporate is a collection of human beings who are authorized and also authenticated. Because both of us will have a company.
Yeah.
We want to do open banking to purchase shares. But maybe you can sign up to 10 million and I can sign 1 million. The question is, just knowing that I have this BVN or you have that NIN is not enough when it comes to corporate open banking. But the standard coming out already have this established. So banks will use what they call customer's mandate, which is the instruction that a corporate body has put together and submitted to the bank will what be used to control. And guess what? If there's a company that have account in FSBA and FSBB, what they have in mandate here may be different from what they have here.
True.
Open banking will be able to cover for both of them. So BVN is only useful when you talk of individual customer who wants to grant open banking access. But for corporates, it's not really that important.
Does open banking come with the capability of you as a lender reading data from, let's assume I have account with bank ABC, right? Will the data that the lender requests, right, will it be limited to just bank A or both bank A and B and C?
Thank you so much. When you do open banking, even if you have three bank accounts in one bank, the one that you have access to is the only one you can see. Yes, you will not be able to have something that allows you to read all customers' bank account, because that would be against the rule of privacy for the customer. Customer will have to grant you access to a bank.
It means that the customer can grant access to all the accounts.
Yes,
if
they can.
So wishes.
If she so wishes. Yes.
And what is the benefit that comes with reading data from multiple accounts for the lender that is, that the customer has approached, to get a facility?
Yeah, because most of all, I know you don't have a good view of anyone unless you can read all their financial statements. So if you read some of my accounts today, they have small money inside. So I'm probably broke.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's wasted. All of us have some bank accounts that are very miserable that we have. Yeah, absolutely. So a lender may request, but some lenders might just be happy to read one. So for example, if your salary account, they know that most of your money comes through your salary account. Yeah, yes, you might save. You might put some money down for groceries somewhere else.
Yeah.
You have to send to your in-laws or whatever. Or maybe you can even send to me. But if your primary money is coming through your salary account, that might be enough. Because they now know where your fund is coming in and how your funds are going up.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So I'm going to ask. There is a report by Accenture. I think that was 2023 or thereabout. 2022 to 2023. That said, only 10%, and of course, this is about 3 years ago now, only 10% of, people who are within the financial service ecosystem who have heard of open banking actually understood what open banking is. And they went further to say this has implication for how consent, right, is granted. And that also means that it may impact the scale of open banking. And this was 2022. I don't know what that numbers look like now. Do you think that we have done enough in Nigeria in terms of awareness, sensitization, to give open banking the kind of springboard, right, that it needs, to jumpstart?
Yeah, thanks so much for that question. So here's the thing. Let me be very open with you. We haven't. We are far behind. And you will assume that maybe we shouldn't do it, but we have to do this because open banking is important. If you notice, so at the committee level, I talk to them and I tell them that stakeholder engagement is the most important part of open banking. See, it's the one thing that other people can do. Anybody can write a technology standard. Everybody can write a process flow. But if you do not carry customers along, we are playing with fire, right? Remember very well, the fraudsters are banking on confusion as far as open banking is concerned, so that they can deceive people, right? When there is light, there's no darkness. Darkness sometimes can be akin to lack of information. So no, we are not doing well, and we've got to put that in. And to be very frank, my desire is my colleagues at the committee to all step forward and do this. How do I know this? Because even when I speak to even senior people, consultants, people that are very exposed and travel the world, I've spoken to ESCO of a bank, and everybody was still a little bit confused about open banking until I started explaining to them. Now, so people are smart, but if you do not tell them the right thing, it's not going to work. So I will put it back to you as well. You work at EFINA. You guys have done a fantastic job. Like, I literally wait for your biannual report on financial inclusion every year. What do you guys want to do to make sure that this, we don't create this information asymmetry, we don't create this information vacuum, because it's this vacuum of information that people will take advantage of.
Yeah.
We have to go out there and tell people about open banking in their own language. We can't speak over them. We have to speak. We have to figure out a way to tell grandpa, grandmas how open banking works. Because these are the people that usually get string phone calls to pass OTPs, and then they will just think they're talking to their parents.
So I was going to go there and to ask that, what are the safeguards? So you just described, I'm going to ask you two in one question. First and foremost, what are the safeguards that are in place to ensure that this kind of phone calls that sometimes you do video calls, right? Sometimes you receive links that you are so sure that this link is coming from my bank, you know, that is requesting. And at the end of the day, just realize that the link you have just clicked on, you know, didn't take you to, you know, but before you could cancel, something has happened. That's on one side. There is also the issue that, look, this was what I signed up for, but I just realized that my data is being used for this. What are the safeguards to avoiding that the kind of data that I have permissioned, I've consented to, is what is used? And when there are violations, I need to seek redress. First, what are the safeguards for ensuring that the providers, the FSPs that are requesting for consent, you know, are not using beyond what is permitted? That's number one. Number two, in the event that that happens, what are the redress mechanisms?
Okay, thank you so much, right? So the work we're doing at this, the committee level, right? One of the things we push forward is to say, there's something called trust marks.
Yeah.
These trust marks will be logos that people can say, this is powered by open banking, this is verified by open banking. But then we've gone a step forward to do something like the NDPR people have done. They did very well. When you click that link, it must take you to the national registry to show that you are actually active, and also when your validity when it expires. The NDPR also has this thing we are going to propose as well, that has a QR code. So even if it's physical, you enter into a shop, you see a POS that say powered by open banking, you can't click anything, but you can scan the POS with the QR code, and it will take you to that same place that this guy is valid. That's number one. Now, that's for verifying that a provider is actually valid. The next thing is that I've seen a transaction. Every transaction in open banking must come with a consent token. This consent token will be centralized with NIPS. So when there's a dispute, you can see these transactions. It's very easy to look at the consent and the transaction that will happen. Because what will then happen is that every consent will have what it can do, how long it's valid for. It doesn't even need rocket science. Yeah. We can see that this consent does not match the transaction. Now, if it matches the transaction, they can show the customer, you give out this consent at a particular ABC time, and this is what it can do.
All right. So, enough of open banking for the included, because people have called me to say, are you not going to just end up focusing more on those who already are within the formal financial service ecosystem? And they've been asking, what about the unbanked, the underbanked? You know, how do we get them to be part of open banking? They are not within the banking system, and we're saying that the data that is to be pulled to make this wonderful decision you can use to pay, you have to be within a formal financial service ecosystem. Is it that we are gradually advancing innovation that now excludes, that further excludes the underbanked and unbanked? What is our thinking around open banking as it relates to the excluded and the underserved?
Yeah, thank you so much for that brilliant question. So open banking, to be very frank, is standardizing the access. SANEF and CBN have done a fantastic job of bringing people in. And today, I can tell you that the barrier to financial inclusion is actually very low.
Mm.
What has been the challenge for financial inclusion hasn't been because it's difficult to open bank account. It's what value are people getting? Open banking increases that value. With open banking, there is more availability of credit.
Mm-hmm.
Credit is the number one attractor of financial inclusion. Because if I'm broke and they tell me to go and get loans for me to sell and be selling this small thing and pay back at the end of the day, I will do it. But if I'm broke and I don't have money and you're telling me to come and open and save, whatever you're saying is stupid. Mm. I can only save when I have money, right? So give me a loan to be able to, for example, create value, and that will bring me in. SANEF done a good job, and I feel like open banking will just make it a whole lot easier for those financially excluded to finally get value from the bank account they can create.
So what I hear you say is, with open banking, with the benefits becoming more apparent, people that are not within the formal financial service ecosystem see what open banking is helping people to unlock, and there is this, attractiveness, right, that then brings people into the formal financial service ecosystem. Amazing. Just before I wrap up, there was a question that I wanted to really ask you, and that is really around when you talk about open banking, we're speaking to the ecosystem in broad terms now. We've been hearing the word API, so you will speak to that very briefly so that we can understand. And there's the API providers, API consumers, and levels of data access. If you could just walk us through these three concepts before we wrap.
Yeah, thank you so much. So API is like the language that computers use to talk to each other.
Okay.
Me and you, we are speaking English.
Yeah.
APIs don't speak English or Pidgin. Computers don't speak English or Pidgin, they speak APIs.
Yeah.
That API is like the sentence construct.
Okay.
So today, you notice that there are many English versions in the world. You go to Wales, their type of language is different. You go to Ireland, you can't even understand them. If you go to Scotland, you're probably going to end up confused. English. APIs is like that. So API is like language, but open banking is like a specific type of language. So we know we're going to call this bonnet, not the hood. We're going to call this maybe the boot, not trunk. That's like open banking API.
Okay.
All of us are agreeing to speak the same language, right? Now, API providers are those that usually have data that somebody can read from. So if you're a bank, MFB, other kind of FSB that stores, that has the right to take money from customers or give out loans, you will be an API provider. But if you're like a fintech that wants to just read data from on behalf, let's say you're a Paystack or Flutterwave or MoneyPoint, you'll probably be an API consumer. Now, some people can actually play on both sides.
Okay.
If I have Wazobia Bank, there is an API provider, right? But if Wazobia Bank wakes up tomorrow and say, I want to build this interesting product that allows me to give loans to customers of other banks, in that instant, they will actually behave like an API consumer. Right? That's the way it's going to work.
Okay.
And but I feel like over time, some of these terms will become and today we mentioned USSD, we call SMS, call WhatsApp. At one time, these things seem very strange.
Yeah, true. Okay. What should the ecosystem do as we expect open banking to become live? And I want to put you on this spot. You may not have the answer. When do we expect open banking to become live?
You know, as someone who's been doing this for 8 years,
I've
got the patience of Job.
Okay.
The one thing I can tell you is that it's going to be done. Now, the reason why I have the assurance that it's going to be done is not because I know. It's because it's the natural evolution of things. If you've got a new baby today, you know your baby will work. But somebody asks you what day is going to work, you probably don't know. Okay, maybe around 1 year birthday.
Mm.
We planned sometime this year. Times are moving a bit, but I think we'll catch up because we can see the energy from everybody concerned. So maybe by the time somebody is watching this podcast, maybe we'll start going live. So, or we can look back at this podcast in 1 year's time and say, at one time, they couldn't pin a date to it.
Yeah. Okay. What should we do?
What should we do? It's to be excited, right? It's like a new bride.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to transform so much. I was having a conversation with some very senior people recently and say, have you seen how many unicorns came out of maybe like maybe agency banking and financial inclusion? You're talking about OP, MoneyPoint, PamPay, and InterSwitch.
InterSwitch, yeah.
Open banking will probably create more unicorns than before because it will remove so much friction and it will accelerate the pace of credit, the pace of payment. Today, a lot of Nigerians are not involved in buying online because there is no card. Paying with card in Nigeria is very difficult.
It is.
But with open banking, you cannot have payment with bank accounts, so that transaction doesn't fail. But you can also have what they call the subscription economy. Today, many businesses don't do well because payments are not sticky. So if, for example, if you are the type that has, maybe you're a barbing salon, you're a gym, you are hair salon, any business you have that can people can come back to repay, with open banking, you can now have true recurring subscription. Then that mean value will be created.
Yeah.
It means that businesses will grow. For many transactions, there are a lot of payments in a year today that are discretionary. And there's a lot of things that have to do with discretionary consumption. Once the friction to pay is there, you just move on. Say, sure. For example, you're a dad, you've got kids. If you guys go out and your kid says, I want this, if the payment method is simple, you actually easily buy for
it. Yeah.
Sure. But if it's difficult, as you are looking for your card, it can't pay, you move on. And that's the end of it. When you don't make that payment, that woman doesn't make a sale. That sale means government doesn't get a VAT. That means Astar doesn't get paid salary. Open banking will remove the barrier to payment and to credit. And Nigeria will probably be a far better place.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to sincerely thank DJ Olowe for sharing this insight with us. From what I've heard, open banking will expand the economy in tremendous way because more payments, more transactions will happen, more capabilities are being created, and small businesses, individuals can actually start making things happen because there is data to make decisions on those. And with respect to the issue around privacy, data, compliance, and all of that, you heard from DG that there is a lot of framework that has been put on ground to ensure that providers, players within the open banking ecosystem are compliant, and there are sanctions in that regard as well. Remember, I did say in an economy that benefits all, everyone must first be included before we can all benefit. So I'm looking forward to seeing you on the open banking journey. And like he said, when you'll be watching this podcast episode, we hope that open banking will have been live. DG, thank you for coming.
Thanks so much, Emmanuel.
And looking forward to having more conversations with you.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure, Ismail.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
And you too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye for now, everyone.
To learn more about Afina, a financial sector deepening organization seeking to facilitate an inclusive market that works for all Nigerians, please visit www.afina.org.ng.